Welcome to Rattled. This episode includes mention of mature topics, including child abuse, death, and thoughts of suicide. Listener discretion is advised. This is part two of Growing Up Haunted. If you're new here, go back and listen to part one first. We'll wait for you. Sometimes, when everything changes, it feels like you're living in a snow globe. The world's been turned upside down, and for better or for worse, you're in survival mode while you learn to live with the new changes. But inevitably, the dust settles, and in time, so do you. That's where I was. Life has suddenly shifted, and survival mode quickly became my new normal. When you live in a place that's dark enough, sad enough, haunted enough for long enough, you start to wonder. Maybe it's not the place that's haunted. Maybe it's you. I'm Sam, and this is Rattled. The challenges our family faced while living in this house started pretty much the day we moved in. We were still unpacking boxes, and my mama was in the middle of painting the living room when somebody knocked at the front door. A very large man with a booming voice said he was from the city and had received a complaint about the home. He didn't say who, just that someone had filed a complaint saying that this home was unlivable and ought to be condemned, and that we should no longer be able to live there, that we should be evicted from the premises immediately. He walked around the house and he looked at a bunch of different things, and he eventually came back. He gave my mama a list. I don't remember everything on the list, but I do remember him specifically mentioning the missing outlet covers and the missing light switches. I don't know if this is the usual practice, but he said that in that town, you could technically condemn a home if there were no light switch covers on, and that if he wanted to, he could do that immediately. Now, this was not my parents' fault. This was just another thing on the list that they were trying to handle. On top of the other damage left by the previous tenants, they had also taken all of the light switch plates and the outlet covers with them, but my parents were focused on the biggest things first, like the holes that had been punched in the bathroom wall or the spray paint, and this was on their to-do list. They just hadn't gotten to it yet, and we still hadn't fully moved in. The man must have taken pity on us or decided not to exercise his authority, because he said that he would give my family a certain period of time, and if we could make a certain number of changes by then, he would not condemn the home. My parents worked really hard to immediately tackle this list and take care of it. We were in no financial position to be able to just move out at a moment's notice. There was no wiggle room for us to just leave. And so they had to do whatever they could to make it okay. And they did. The man came back and he looked around and he was satisfied with all the work that had been done. That's when he told my mama why he had come out in the first place. There was a family feud going on between our landlord and her sister regarding the property that we were renting. And the lady and her husband that we rented from were very nice people, but her sister wasn't so nice. And it turned out that her sister is the one who had called and made a report about the home in the hopes of having our family evicted so that her sister could not use this home as a rental property. The months went by and we all settled in to our new home and a new way of life. It became very obvious really early on that we were not in the safest area. We lived at the intersection of two old highways, and there was a very high crime area pretty close to where we lived. Those incidences often made their way down the street and directly into our front yard. One Saturday morning, I looked out the kitchen window and I heard a popping noise. My dad heard it too. He went outside to investigate, and there had been a drive-by shooting. The windows in our car had been shot out. There were several arrests made in the front of our home. We had watched from the window, peeking through the blinds. One time, somebody was pulled over by our mailbox. There were probably a dozen police officers in our front yard, and they raised the hood of this car and began to pull bags and bags of illegal substances out of the engine. They laid them all out on our front yard and took inventory and pictures before they took it all away. Another night, there was a police chase in the area, and that person stopped in our front yard, and they were arrested. When we looked out the window, we saw that in addition to the dozen or so officers in our yard, there was also a camera crew from the television show Cops, and they were filming the whole thing. The intersection was a high crash area, and the light was at the top of a small hill, and there was a blind spot for people turning left. The road directly in front of our house was a straightaway for a couple of miles, and as such, it attracted street racers and motorcyclists. Many people tried to speed through to make the light, some with devastating consequences. There were a number of crashes that resulted in fatalities. One of the worst was a couple of young people racing on their motorcycle, and one of them wasn't able to stop in time for the light, and they slid under the car in front of them, and they did not make it. I can't count the number of times that I heard the sound of squealing brakes, shattering glass, and the sound of impact. Flashing lights and sirens were a common occurrence, and so was the subject of accidents and severe injury and death. Even though me and my siblings were too young to fully comprehend the idea of death and what that really meant, we knew that if you looked outside and you saw an bad accident and there was a white sheet, that, you know, somebody had lost their life. The safety concerns went well beyond speeding and traffic stops. On one occasion, when I was outside, two men in an old gold-colored sedan with tinted windows stopped in front of our house. One of these men rolled down his window and said, "Hey, little girl, come here. You want some candy? I got the good stuff." I froze and did not respond. So the other one got out of the car, and he left the door open as he walked in the front yard toward me, saying that he had a puppy and I should get into their car to see it. My heart immediately started racing. I knew all about stranger danger, and I doubted there was anything good for me in that car. I ran inside as fast as I could, and I locked the door. I do not remember if my mama was home at the time, but I was absolutely terrified that they were going to try to come into our house and take me. Because of these and many other incidences, we were largely forbidden from playing outside in the front yard or even in the driveway without adult supervision. We did have some woods to play in the backyard for a little bit, and we even found a small old barn. For a while, that felt like old times, but then we learned that adults were setting up places in the barn to sleep and to use substances and started to find all sorts of things that were not appropriate for children there. So when my mama found out about that, we were not allowed to go out there anymore either. We began to spend more and more time inside. But for me, being inside didn't feel safe either. Nighttime was the worst for me. Over the years that we lived there, I began to notice a pattern. The dark, heavy feeling settled in just around the time the sun started to go down, and it intensified once night set in. I had horrible nightmares all the time. In these dreams, I was a child who was locked in some place. It was dark and I could not get out. I felt overwhelming despair, like life was completely hopeless. In my dreams, someone I could not see was yelling at me through a door, calling me names, telling me that I was an embarrassment, and they wished that they never had me. I had never heard anybody speak to someone the way that this person in my dreams did before. The voice was full of hate and bitterness and anger. I would wake myself up from these dreams yelling out and sobbing for help. I don't know exactly when, but it was probably within the first 6 months to maybe a year after we had moved in, I woke up from one of these dreams, and I felt like somebody was watching me. I turned over and I looked in the corner of the room. There was a tall, dark, shadowy figure in the corner. It was almost as tall as the ceiling. I could see that it had a head, but it did not have any other features. It was just the blackest black, darker than everything in the room, darker than the night, darker than other shadows. My blood ran cold and my heart raced. I threw my covers and my pillow over my head and I prayed for it to go away. I stayed that way until I fell asleep again. I only ever saw this thing in the middle of the night. It was always in the same spot, watching. It gave off an energy that was dark and heavy and dense. It was as if it was a collection of sorrow, frustration, and anger. I remember waking up several times and seeing it there. I made my little sisters move with me to go sleep in my brother's bedroom where it was safer. my mama would often come down to find all five, and eventually all six of her children, piled up in one room. Before bed, I would have these thoughts in my head that did not seem like they were mine, just like when I went up into that upstairs closet. The best way that I can explain it was like there was another voice in my head that was louder than my own thoughts. It was like somebody else was talking to me, but in my mind instead of my ear. One night, this voice began to flood my mind. It said all sorts of negative things. It said if I was lucky, I would die in my sleep that night. My parents would find me the next morning and consider it a blessing. They wouldn't care. They'd be relieved that they had one less mouth to feed. I began to pray and told it to go away, but that didn't help. It was so upsetting to me, and I felt so lost and out of control that I started crying. My mom came in and she saw me and she asked me what was wrong, but I could not bring myself to tell her what was going on. I ended up writing a note to my family that night. I hid it in my drawer so that just in case something happened to me that night, if that dark shadowy figure in the corner did get me and swallow me up too, at least they'd know that I loved them and I did try hard to be a good girl. Obviously, I woke up the next morning and I was alive and everybody was fine and that mean voice was gone. I felt like I was being tortured every night by something. And whatever that something was playing a very sick game with me and they were enjoying it. I knew my family loved me. I never had these thoughts anywhere else. Before or after we lived there, but come sunset almost every night, I'd have somebody else's thoughts in my head telling me that I was the most unlovable person in the world. Nobody could really love me, that I didn't deserve to breathe air, and that things would be better for my family if I just unalived myself. I tried so many different ways to figure out how to tell my mama and my daddy what I was experiencing. But I could never find the words. What was I going to do? Tell my parents that I thought a demon was talking to me at night? There were so many implications to admitting that there was something wrong. Being as it was that my childhood was so non-traditional, and we were firmly living the fundamental Baptist lifestyle. It was just not something that emotionally or even spiritually that I could bring myself to say out loud. I don't blame my parents for me being incapable of speaking my truth, but it would have been a lot easier if I had been exposed to literally anything else besides the kind of hellfire and brimstone religion that we followed, because I could have maybe had a different perspective and not felt absolutely terrified that I had been cursed by God and was being punished and that He was not there for me. I blamed myself and my inability to control my own brain and my own thoughts. You know, I didn't want to feel this way. I didn't want to have these really heavy negative thoughts. I didn't want to have these violent images in my mind. I didn't want to see that tall, dark thing in the corner of my bedroom at night, but I couldn't control it. And a big part of our religion was self-control. And this was something that was way beyond me, and I had no coping mechanism other than to keep it to myself and pray and pray and pray. It got so bad that I eventually tried to make myself go to sleep before the sunset in the hopes that I wouldn't feel those awful feelings or have any more nightmares. I have a distinct memory of it being about 6:30. I went to my room and I laid down on the floor to try to force myself to go to sleep so that I would not feel bad or have that voice pop into my head again. My mama came in looking for something for another child. She saw me laying there and told me it was not time to go to sleep yet. It was too early. I still needed to get up and finish some chores and participate in the nightly Bible study. And I wasn't asleep. I heard everything she said. But the fear of dealing with that heavy feeling and those thoughts that weren't mine and the nightmares was greater to me than the fear of making my mama mad that night. So I just laid there and pretended to be asleep. We both knew I wasn't. But eventually she gave up trying and she left the room. I never told her why I was trying to go to bed so early because, again, I thought my brain was sinning and I was in real danger of hellfire. I didn't want my mama to know how bad I might be on the inside. That's not how she raised me. It did occur to me that maybe I was one of those people that was going to lose my mind. Maybe I was going to wake up one day and my mind would totally be broken. And I wouldn't make any sense at all, and my parents would have to put me away in an institution. That thought was just as scary to me as the idea that maybe I was a sinner that God couldn't actually save, or that I might never find myself in the Lord's good graces. When I think on it now, I'm not sure which scenario breaks my heart more. In some way, I was just as trapped in real life as I was in my dreams. What I know now, but did not know then, was that I was not the only one having trouble sleeping. My mama would wake up in the middle of the night with a sinking and heavy feeling in her stomach, too. She felt like something absolutely horrible was about to happen and would be worried and walk downstairs, check on all of her children to make sure we were okay. She would feel something watching her that she could not see. She prayed and prayed until she felt whatever it was leave. And then she would go back to bed. My mama began to play gospel music all day long, nonstop. When she did, the house would temporarily feel a little bit lighter and that heavy feeling would go away, but it never lasted for too long. My mama also forbid us from playing in that upstairs closet. She didn't tell us why at the time. She just said it was a creepy place and she better not find us in it. Eventually, she would close off the entire upstairs bathroom in that closet and nobody used it. So there we were, sitting in a house that was supposed to give us more space, and we couldn't even use part of the house. A day came when my mama had enough of this thing bothering her. She felt that dark, heavy presence again. She went downstairs, she prayed in all the rooms, and then at some point she got angry. She yelled at whatever was there. And she told it to leave her and her family alone. Whatever it was not welcome there. After this, she had my dad call our pastor and have him come over to the house. Now, this is a big request for an independent fundamental Baptist. Like I mentioned before, our religion was very black and white in terms of the afterlife and the unexplained. If it wasn't from God, it was from Satan. End of story. So, my dad asking for this was tantamount to him admitting that he thought there might be demons living in our house. Our pastor went throughout our home with his Bible and his prayers, and he demanded whatever was in the home to leave. This resulted in a reprieve for a little while at least, and for the first time in a long time, I was free from those swirling thoughts, terrible nightmares, and that creepy dark shadow being in the corner of my bedroom. It was too bad it didn't last. Over the years, our pastor would come several times with his Bible and his holy oil or whatever it was that Baptist preachers did to houses with evil in it. And every time, we would get a little bit of a break from the negativity and the heaviness, but it would always come back. It lived there before we did. Whatever it was had no intention of leaving. We'd been living there for a good while when a neighbor a few doors down met up with my mama. During that conversation, they filled her in about the many issues with the previous tenants. This neighbor told her that two women and their child lived there before our family moved in, and it was no secret to anybody that lived around that there were serious issues in that home. The neighbor had often found their young son wandering around outside, alone and hungry. This neighbor observed this child being locked out of their house for days at a time. He wasn't just locked out. Sometimes he was locked in. Inside that little closet upstairs. The one with the scratch marks and the kids writing all over it. The closet that my mama forbid us from going in. The one that gave me the feeling of being the most unloved, unwanted creature on the planet. Yeah. That closet. The neighbor did what they could to help the child, and they reported their concerns, and they told the appropriate people how the boy had said that he was treated, along with the things that the neighbor was aware of. But just like so many stories you hear about today, kids were falling through the cracks back then too. When I reached the 7th grade, my parents enrolled me in a private Christian school for that year. Outside of 1st grade, when I had the chance to go to a primary school, this was my first time having a real school experience. This school did align with our church's teachings and fundamentalist beliefs, but for me, it was freedom to be away from home every day. I loved going to school. I didn't say too much when I was there, but I observed everything everyone did and I soaked it all in. When I was at school, I felt like myself again. The closest thing to feeling impending doom there was right before a math test or a class presentation, and I was pretty sure every other kid felt the same way about those projects, too. While I absolutely cherished the time away from home, it also emphasized the heaviness that I would feel when I came back. There was an afternoon where I walked into my bedroom, and I found my sister, who was 6, maybe 7 years old, in our closet. She had a kitchen knife in her hand, which she was not allowed to have, and I asked her what she was doing with it. She told me she was going to hide it. She said that she hated everything, she hated her life, and she wanted to kill herself. I completely freaked out on the inside. I asked her where she got that idea from, and she told me that she didn't know. I think it's really important to understand the context of my childhood and the things that we were and were not exposed to, because this is not a topic that we were exposed to in any way other than my parents having that talk that if you ever feel like you're going to hurt yourself, then you should tell mommy and daddy and they will make sure that, you know, you're okay. You should always know that you're loved and we love you and God loves you. We were not exposed to violent television, violent movies. We didn't do the violent video games. We did not interact with things that were dark or scary. And so it was kind of mind-boggling to me to see my little baby sister say these things. I waited until she got distracted and she left the room, and then I went and found the knife where she had hid it, and I put it away. That night, I pulled my mama aside, and I told her what my sister had said, and I also told my mama how worried I was. That did not seem like a normal thing for a really young child to say or do. I was maybe 11, but even I knew there was something terribly wrong with this. I never once thought of anything like that when I was 6. I didn't even know about it. Where did she learn this from? My mama told me not to worry. I still remember that southern phrase she used that night. She said, "Honey, your sister is just trying to get your goat," meaning that my sister was just trying to upset me, but she wasn't actually serious. I think this interaction bothered me so much because what she said was so similar to the voice that I heard in my own head at nighttime. And I recognized that none of this was normal and none of this was okay. And I wondered if she was being affected by something in the house too. But I didn't know how to ask. So I kept those thoughts to myself. Other things begin to happen in our home. Things that defied explanation. There was a small toy left in our house, and I don't know exactly where it came from, but it was a small box with a tiny clown head on the top of it, and it would laugh maniacally. We called it the creepy clown laugh. It was downright diabolical, and my brothers had fun pranking us with it. At some point, this toy started laughing all by itself without anybody messing with it. That was super creepy. So we put it in a drawer in the kitchen. One day, I was doing the dishes and I heard that creepy clown laugh. I rolled my eyes, thinking that my brother was hiding in the kitchen somewhere. When I realized everyone was outside, I opened the kitchen drawer and I saw it in there. Clown face up, laughing. I switched the button to off on the side and the laughter stopped. I closed the drawer and I went back to what I was doing. A few minutes later, I heard that creepy clown laugh again. I dried my hands and opened the drawer. It was still off, but that maniacal laughter was still gone. I figured that the switch must have broken, so I turned it over and I pulled out the batteries. I tossed the toy back in the back of the drawer and I shut it. And I put the whole thing out of my mind. A day or two later, I was doing my kitchen chores again, and I heard that familiar sound. The creepiest, most unhinged laugh. I rolled my eyes, thinking my brothers had put the batteries back in and were trying to creep me out. I flung open the drawer, and I saw the creepy clown face up, staring at me. And it was laughing at full volume. I picked it up and I flipped it over to take out the batteries. There were no batteries in it. Other toys went off by themselves. Sometimes without being turned on, sometimes without batteries. I watched this happen on a number of occasions, and I thought it was strange and spooky, but none of that bothered me as much as the thoughts and the nightmares and the shadowy figure in the corner of my room. I do think that whatever was in this home thrived on negativity. One day when my daddy was home, I was in the kitchen washing dishes, and he was lecturing us about obeying our parents and following God. I was in a mood. I was hitting puberty. I was riding a daily roller coaster of emotions, which was its own set of problems. But on top of that, that day, I was feeling angry, and resentment was building up inside of me. I had cooked an entire meal for our family of 8 people. And typically, the family rule was that if one person cooked, they did not clean. But for whatever reason that day, my daddy decided that I needed to be the cook and the cleaner. As I was washing the dishes, I was listening to him with my back turned, and I could hear that he was becoming more and more agitated the more that he talked. His voice began to rise. His tone was getting more angry and sharp. And nobody was saying anything. It was like he was talking himself up into a frenzy. His lecture went on and on for about 10 minutes. And while he was continuing to give us this talking to, he reached a point where he was practically yelling. Simultaneously, I was feeling more and more frustrated and stuck and hopeless and resentful and angry. On the inside, anyway. On the outside, I had my Christian girl poker face on. To say anything would have been considered being disrespectful to my father, and I would absolutely not risk that. So I had my hands in the soapy water, listening to my dad yell about how we were displeasing God and disobeying, all while feeling like I was going to explode if I had to listen to this for one more minute. Suddenly, I heard a loud pop, and the light bulb above me exploded. I screamed as the glass rained down into my hair, across my face, into the sink, and all over the counters and floors. My dad stopped in mid-sentence, and for a few brief seconds, there was silence. I stepped away from the sink. Suds were still on my hands. My mama came into the room hearing all this commotion and asked what was going on. My dad was now distracted from his anger and his lecture, and everybody's attention turned to what had just happened. I helped to clean up the bits of glass. I was afraid that another bulb would burst. My dad said it was safe and I should finish washing the dishes. And I did as he asked, keeping one eye on the long bulb that was left up there. You know, maybe it was just a faulty bulb. If so, it's the only time in my entire life when I've had one explode. In that moment, it was just one more thing to add to my growing pile of tumultuous emotions, and all I could do was try to stuff it down and keep on going. We continued to live in this home until I was almost 14. And once we moved, I never had a single issue like that again. The recurring nightmares stopped. That voice that wasn't my voice, it never came back. The dark shadow was not in my new house or my new bedroom. When we left, it was like all of that was left behind too. I have since asked my siblings what they remember about living in that house, and you know how they say that people will forget what you said and what you did, but they'll always remember how you made them feel. Well, they all say that, you know, even though they were young and they don't have a lot of memories, they do remember that the house felt dark and sad and depressing and heavy. So in some ways, they were being affected too. I'll let the listener make up their own mind as to what they think was really going on in this house. Some people might think it was a haunting or evil or just bad energy. Maybe it was just a place where sadness and negativity piled up. I think in some way I was picking up on what that little boy was experiencing when he lived there. And I personally don't think it matters what you call it. I've been touched by that energy and I recognize it now. It makes a lot of sense to me that if I can go someplace and feel happy and feel love and feel joy and feel that sense of connectedness and belonging, that the opposite exists out there too. I think it's just the duality of life. After we moved out, the house was eventually condemned. The home itself was demolished, and the land was put up for sale. When I looked up my old address as I was getting this story together, I learned that that parcel of land still has not sold. You know, the house might be gone, but I'm pretty sure of it. Whatever was in that house, it's probably still there. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it ever plans to leave. If you have a story of your own, I'd love to hear about it. You can find me on Instagram or TikTok at Rattled Podcast. I'll see you there.